Hello, everybody. This is Paul Boyer. Welcome to the Mad Money Machine Show 181 for Friday, November 5th, 2010. That's 3 days after the big throw the bums out day. That's 2 days after the big print $600 billion day. And that's 1 day after the incredible market rally day. So today is a great day to be right here. I'll be talking about all three of those big events. And I'll also talk a little bit about the election. You know, I'm thinking maybe Californians thought they were voting for Harry Brown. Let me tell you quickly about an encounter with a fan, first ever for me. I was driving around in my convertible. Someone pulled up beside me. And I thought they were going to ask for directions. They said, "Are you Paul Boyer?" Beside me, this guy pulls up beside me at the stoplight. I was getting ready to turn left, and the other lane would go, I don't know, right, I guess. I think a couple cars back from the light. In the right lane, there weren't any cars back from the light, but this guy stops right beside me and says, "Hey!" I look over. "Are you Paul Boyer?" And I'm thinking, all right, now how do I know this person? How do I know this person? How do I know this person? He says, "I listen to your podcast." And I give him the thumbs up sign. You know, how much can I, you know, really hold a conversation sitting waiting for the light to turn green? He says, "I saw your license plate," which says Mad Money on the back of it. M-A-D-M-N-Y, Virginia tags. And I don't know what I said. "Thanks a lot." And the light turned green and drove off. The whole encounter took maybe 20 seconds. Which leaves me with 14 minutes and 40 seconds of fame left. Well, the elections are over, and here's the theme song, I think, to the elections of 2010. Ding dong, the wicked man, wicked, 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 ding dong, the wicked, wicked man. Break out your peaky and rub your eyes, get out of bed. Break out the wicked, wicked man. I suppose there are at least 60 wicked witches that are quote unquote dead as a result of the election, voted out of office. It's a shame there weren't 430 some voted out of office, but I did my part. My congressman was up for re-election for the 16th time. In other words, he's been in office now for 32 years. Holy cow. I voted for the independent candidate, which who got about 2% of the vote in my district. So, you know, not everything's a big libertarian sweep this year, but we did throw a lot of the bums out. Now, one of the most interesting things I think is going to come from the election is that now that the Republicans are in charge of the House of Representatives, the chairmanships of the various committees and subcommittees will change. Of course, the Speaker of the House will change. We won't have to see her a lot anymore. We'll get to see some other person, hopefully not as cringeworthy. But the most interesting thing about it is that it's not even the Speaker of the House to me. It's the chairman of a subcommittee. The chairman of the subcommittee on Monetary Policy. This is under the Financial Services Committee, which I believe was headed by Barney Frank. And I guess that'll change, which will be interesting. But it's still not as interesting as the change of chairmanship of this subcommittee. The Monetary Policy Subcommittee used to be Watt from North Carolina. Now everyone is talking about it's going to be Ron Paul, a congressman from Texas, presidential candidate last time around. And the interesting thing about this is Ron Paul has written a book called End the Fed, where he talks about getting rid of the Federal Reserve banking cartel and replacing the fiat money dollar with a gold-backed money. I don't know whether he says call it a dollar anymore or not. But so the interesting thing about him being the chair of this subcommittee is that he will set the agenda. He will call for the interviews. He can now push forward his agenda to audit the Fed, which I think we need. And he can also push forward the agenda of auditing the gold reserves. How much gold does the United States have in Fort Knox or under some bunker in New York City? We haven't known the answer to that in over 50 years. No one's ever seen an audit statement of the amount of gold that's held by the United States. Why is that important? Well, it's important to know what the wealth of the country is. It's important to know if we should ever try to come up with a monetary scheme based upon precious metals. How much precious metals does the United States own? You know, gold is the second most favored currency around the world, the number one being the dollar. And the dollar is coming under a lot of criticism right now, especially since 2 days ago when the Federal Reserve announced that they're going to buy something like $600 billion worth of government bonds, something that Ben Bernanke said he was not going to do. This is called monetizing the debt. Monetizing the debt. In other words, the government says they're going to borrow money from somebody. They're going to issue bonds. And usually, you know, it's people that buy the bonds or banks buy the bonds or countries like China, Japan buy our bonds. In other words, loan us money. Well, now the Federal Reserve is going to buy these bonds, but what are they going to buy them with? The Federal Reserve, you know, they don't, I guess they don't have any real assets. What they can do is on their computer, they can type in, all right, add $600 billion to our account, and then we'll take these pieces of paper called bonds and put them in our safe. And so now the government has $600 billion to spend on stuff, but where did the money come from? It came from a computer. Someone typed it in. So now there's $600 billion sloshing around. The government's going to be able to spend to buy stuff. And then the people that get the money from the government, they're going to have money to buy stuff. And it's just going to wash through the system, creating something everyone's talking about, and that is inflation. And so I would like to get a view of an expert about this occurrence. And we're going to do something a little different then this time on Guru Roulette. We're going to spin the wheel and ask this guru specifically about the Fed creating $600 billion. So let's have a spin at the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, I'll ask them about the Fed's creating $600 billion. Here we go. And the winner this time on Madman Machine Show 181 is James Wesley Rawls. Well, James Wesley Rawls runs the popular website called survivalblog.com, which every day comes out with about six postings, and one of them is his wrap-up, a couple of them are reader submitted articles about survival. And then there's always a sort of a compendium of economic advice and odds and ends advice, and then a quote for the day. And I'm always interested in reading particularly the economic links to articles and the odds and ends. Well, under the general discussion section, James Wesley Rawls mentions this about the elections and the Fed printing $600 billion. He says, "I was asked about the implications of the recent political power shift in Washington, D.C. following the November 2010 midterm elections. Although it is generally good news, I must sadly conclude that we're still in deep Schumer," which is his oft-quoted euphemism for deep doo-doo. "Another $600 billion in monetization was just announced by the Fed. And Senator Judd Gregg, Republican of New Hampshire, a sitting U.S. senator, admitted that in a couple of years, unless our level of indebtedness is decreased, our sovereign debt position will be no better than that of Greece." And parenthetically, he says, "But this is mathematically impossible, since our debt is compounding, so the U.S. will be a great big banana republic." End parenthetical. Whether the denizens, and James Wesley Rawls continues, "whether the denizens of D.C. shift to a policy of austerity, or they continue with bailouts and monetization, and whether the interest rates go up or down, every summary sentence will end with the words, ... and crashed the economy." So after celebrating the Republican victory and bemoaning the continuing Democrat control of the Senate, I recommend that you get practical. Redouble your family preparedness efforts. We are heading into some very hard times with plenty of drama. The U.S. dollar is doomed. There is now virtually nothing that anyone can do to stop it. So get busy, get out of dollars, and into tangibles pronto. And if you'd like to learn more about what James Wesley Rawls thinks about the economy and investing, go to survivalblog.com. Congratulations, James Wesley Rawls. You're the guru on Mad Men Machine Show 181. Well, it was within the past couple of weeks, a very good new podcast has arrived on the scene talking about explicitly and exclusively the permanent portfolio, the Harry Brown permanent portfolio. And I'm talking, of course, about the Crawling Road podcast. I've talked about the crawlingroad.com forums that you can go to discuss the permanent portfolio. Well, now, Craig Rowland, which is the anagram which makes up the words Crawling Road. I wondered where Crawling Road came from, and now we know that he's revealed his last name, Craig R. Craig Rowland has a new podcast. He calls it the Crawling Road Money Show, and he begins it and ends it with the music that Harry Brown used on his Money Talk show some years ago. What's 6 or 7 years ago now? And so he's got 4 episodes of his Money Show podcast out. I've listened to them as soon as they were released. I'm very eager to hear what he has to say about them. It's no nonsense discussion. The first one, he talks about his background as a startup, a person that created a startup company and sold it, and then tried to figure out what to do with his investments, got snared by some money managers and sent off in the wrong direction, and finally learned about the permanent portfolio and how we can't predict the future, therefore we should invest in the permanent portfolio. So that was the first episode. The second episode, talked a little bit more about the permanent portfolio details, but the third episode was an interview with one of the gurus that came up on the Mad Money Machine Roulette Wheel a little time ago, Matt Medium Tex, who is a very frequent contributor at Boglehead's forum in the Harry Brown permanent portfolio thread out there. Well, Medium Tex, we heard his voice finally, and Craig and Medium Text had a discussion about the permanent portfolio. And then in episode 4, just released yesterday, I believe it was, Craig talked about the details of the 4 economic cycles: inflation, deflation, recession, and prosperity, and which investment best matches each economic cycle. In fact, we can't predict the economic cycles, and we should be invested in each of the best investments equally, and then rebalance when things get out of balance, or annually, whichever comes first, I suppose. So I think a good slogan around the permanent portfolio would be, "The future is unknowable, invest accordingly." And I encourage you to sign up for the Crawling Road podcast. You can find it at crawlingroad.com, or you can go to iTunes and search for it there and subscribe and get it automatically on your Apple device. So I think in talking about the permanent portfolio, I would like to talk about one particular component of that, and that is gold. Wow, gold had a big run, as did a lot of non-dollar assets yesterday. As stocks went up big, gold went up big, silver went up almost 6% in one day. Is that not inflation? Well, what's a good way to invest in gold? Gold coins, of course, is a good way. If you can get access to a reputable dealer that doesn't rip you off in sales commissions too badly. An easier way, perhaps, once you've got some gold coins in your possession, is to invest in an exchange-traded fund. Makes it very easy, if you have a brokerage and some money in your brokerage account, to just buy the shares of a gold fund. It still kind of doesn't feel like direct. It certainly isn't direct gold ownership, but I guess it's the next best thing we got. And if you're investing, a lot of money, it's hard to buy a lot of gold coins. So, but it's easy to buy a lot of an exchange-traded fund. And some of the top ones that we talk about, I think one of the largest exchange-traded funds of any exchange-traded fund, in fact, is GLD, gold. But there's another competitor to that one that I might recommend you have a look at, ticker symbol IAU, which is the iShares Gold, AU being the periodic table elemental symbol for gold, AU, IAU. The reason why you might want to go look at IAU versus GLD is simply the expense ratio. Yes, how much do you pay the managers of the fund out of your balance to run the fund? Well, GLD charges 40 basis points, I think they call it, 0.4%, and IAU charges less. They charge 25 basis points, or 0.25%. So, hey, it's your money. Might as well keep as much as you can of it. Let's take a little musical intermission now. This is a tune that I discovered using my Pandora account, which I did sign up for, by the way, paying $36 a year to get commercial-free music. This song is by Christina Train from her Spilt Milk album 2009, song entitled Don't Remember.
Time to sleep, time to wake, wish I could. Can you forgive me? There's no time like the past. And then I ask why I don't. so much less than you, I guess. So don't feel sorry for me now. No one ever did before. I lost that war. Don't remember. It breaks your heart forever. All I can hear is sorry.
Couple of shows ago, I talked about the Smart Money Portfolio tool, which lets you look at things in real time, which is real cool. It's something you shouldn't do, but I do it anyway. I think the reason why I do it, quite frankly, is I still am not 100% invested in the permanent portfolio. I have drawn down from an enormous cash position. If you recall, just a little history of my investing background. I'd say in 2006, 2007, I was all about getting into a stock bond portfolio and mostly forgot about the bonds. I guess I was stocks cash. And when things got really wild and woolly at the end of 2007, I was at a point where I was moving away from a 401k plan into an IRA, and I just put everything in cash at that point, which was lucky for me because I missed the big downturn of 2008. So I beat the market in 2008 just by not being in the market. But then when things turned around from the bottom and realized that I needed to be in the permanent portfolio, well, I wanted to buy things cheaply, but by, 2009, it looked like stocks had gone up so much that I was waiting for a pullback, and I keep waiting for a pullback, and I'm still waiting for a pullback, although I am down from, I think I was at one time 80% cash. I'm now down to only 35% cash. So my portfolio, just to tell you, the actual Harry Brown permanent portfolio is up about 13, 14, 15% for the year. What I call the Paul Boyer permanent portfolio, just a slight variation on that. It's up maybe a percent more than that for the year. My actual performance year to date in my account is up 10.5% even with the enormous cash position I've had. Part of the reason why is that some of the assets I have are not in the permanent portfolio. For example, I still own some of that Southern Copper Corporation. You remember back in 2006 when I talked about buying PCU, because I did all those tests on that stock, and it's the one that kept coming up as the most undervalued, highest dividend, and so forth. Well, it's gone crazy in its performance. Copper miner, along with all the precious metals going up. And so that has bolstered my returns, even though I have a lot in cash. And then also, In addition to the gold component, I have some silver. And silver has outperformed gold quite dramatically. I think just since I've bought the silver, it's up like 60-some percent, which is crazy. Of course, the thing to remember about silver is that it is more volatile than gold. I think, if the two metals over the long, long term rise in about the same percentage, what you're going to find is silver swings up and down more wildly in price than gold does, both of them reaching generally the same point in the end. But so the good news is, I guess, when things are going up, silver goes up quicker. But when things are going down, the same is true. Silver goes down more quickly. So that's the added risk of owning silver in a portfolio. Harry Brown talked about silver. He said he was a very big silver bug back in the 70s. But now since that time, he recommends just gold, just being in gold. Gold is the monetary metal, and it's the one to be in for the quarter of the portfolio. Well, there's another tool in addition to the Smart Money real-time tracking tool. Let's pull it out of the tool crib. Yes, this tool helps you look at the past performance of your ETF-based portfolio. It's called ETF Replay, etfreplay.com, a visualization tool for investors. Now, you go to that website, you'll see a menu. In the center of the menu is backtesting, and you click on that, pull down, and select ETF Portfolio. You're backtesting an ETF portfolio with this tool. What I've done then is gone in, and for the permanent portfolio, I've added in the Paul Boyer permanent portfolio, VBR 12.5%, VWO 12.5%, then IAU, TLT, SHY, each at 25%. And then you select the period that you want to backtest. I've chosen here 36 months, the last 36 months. You press the button called Test Strategy, and up come some charts and graphs and things. First is a chart showing the total returns, including all dividends, from November 5th, 2007 through November 4th, 2010. And it shows a nice green line for this permanent portfolio going up from $100,000 to now over, I don't know, $122,000, $126,000, I guess it is. And it compares it to just a S&P 500 index, which has dropped down 13% in the year. In fact, the chart on the right shows the total return in percentage. The portfolio up 26%, index 500 down 13%. And it shows the volatility measured by annualized standard deviation. And the annualized standard deviation of the portfolio is 9.7%. But the annualized standard deviation of the S&P 500 itself is 30%. So the volatility, much more volatile in just the stocks alone than in the permanent portfolio. It also shows at the bottom the max drawdown. Now, I've talked about standard deviation a little bit, and I'd like to talk about max drawdown once this tool in the crib segment ends. So I give you a recommendation to go out to ETF Replay. It's free. And try putting in your portfolio and see how it did. That's our tool in the crib, ETF Replay. Like other tools I've given you so far, it's free. Yeah, I wrote a blog posting out at madmoneymachine.com about max drawdown. I think max drawdown is an equally good measure of risk if you can get it. If you can get it is the key. Here's the thing about max drawdown versus standard deviation. Look, what we're trying to do is measure the risk that has been present in a portfolio. We're back testing portfolios to see how risky they were, to hopefully try and give us an indication of how risky they might be in the future. And ideally, of course, you want something with high returns that's not very risky. And, you know, if you can find the exact one then going forward in the future, well, good luck. The best we can do is, I think, put something in a permanent portfolio. Don't care about what the future holds. Know that this portfolio is is one of the least risky you can get into because it accounts for all the economic cycles. Well, so max drawdown versus standard deviation. Standard deviation measures the up and down swings that have happened in a portfolio. Max drawdown, like the term implies, measures the maximum drop from peak to trough that occurred in the portfolio. So if I tell you that a portfolio has a standard deviation of 9.7%, you go, huh. Now, if I tell you that the portfolio had a max drawdown of 15%, you go, oh, right? I think max drawdown is much more user-friendly than standard deviation. And, you know, I did a plot then of all the lazy portfolios since, 2003, 2004, showing their max drawdown, showing also a chart showing their standard deviation and the relationship. Those two charts look almost exactly the same. The lazy portfolios appeared in the charts in very much the same places using max drawdown or using standard deviation. So with max drawdown, why don't we just use that and be able to tell people, look, this portfolio experienced a 30% drawdown in the past. Or this portfolio experienced a 40% drawdown in the past, or it experienced a 15% drawdown in the past. Which one would you like? As opposed to saying, you know, it had a standard deviation of 9.7 or it had a standard deviation of 30.5. Much more intuitive. Ah, but here's the problem. While those two charts looked the same, they were computed using sort of different data. The standard deviation chart, I think it used just 9 points, sample points. In other words, it used year-end prices for the portfolios for those, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, or 9 years, whatever they were. By comparison, I had to go for max drawdown statistics. I had to use month-ending returns. I had to go back and compute all the monthly returns for these portfolios, and that worked out to something like 60 or 90 sample points. And you think with more sample points, you'd get higher precision you do get higher precision in the max drawdown number. Do you think it might change the chart from max drawdown chart to the standard deviation chart? But no, they look generally the same. So the problem then is computing max drawdown is harder. It's much harder for you to compute the max drawdown of a portfolio because you don't have all this data showing the portfolio values sampled monthly. You know, ideally, you'd have it sampled daily or maybe, you know, hourly. Because here's the thing. The permanent portfolio in 2008, it experienced a month. There was a one-month time frame where it went down 10%. I think it was October of 2008. That portfolio, one of the least risky, it went down 10%. But the next 2 months, it went up 4%, then up 6%. So by the end of the year, the total change in the portfolio was about 0% from the previous year. So if you did just yearly computation on max drawdown, you wouldn't see that it had been drawn down 10 or 15%. During the year. You would just see from the previous year, it's about the same as it was last year. There's no drawdown. Well, that's why we need to look inside the year and see how the portfolio swings. You know, but standard deviation, on the other hand, it still works out that the relationships between the lazy portfolios look the same. It's just amazing. It's a statistical oddity to me. Something that you just wouldn't inherently think about until you actually look at the results. And so I encourage you to play with that. Go out to madmanmachine.com and look at the posting put out there called Max Drawdown. And also use that tool, ETF Replay, to look at your portfolio. And good luck to you in looking at the risk of your portfolios. Nothing more. there's one more thing I want to talk about that I haven't mentioned yet about the max drawdown and measuring risk. You know what the Sharpe ratio is, right? If you plot a chart with the returns going up and down, you know, going higher means a higher return in the portfolio, and then going from left to right, you have higher risk in the portfolio. And let's use risk as standard deviation this time. So you have this scatter plot of return versus risk. Where do you want to be on that chart? You want to be left on the chart, which is lower risk, and you want to be high, top on the chart, which is high return. So you want to be top left on the chart. Now there's a way to mathematically measure how far a plot is at the top left of a chart, and that's dividing the returns by the standard deviation. And if you do that and you take risk adjusted returns, which subtracts the T-bill rate from the returns, you divide the returns by the standard deviation, you get the Sharpe ratio. Yeah, the Sharpe ratio. It's a ratio. It's a divide. You divide something by something. That's a ratio. Well, this Sharpe ratio measures the gain versus pain, basically, in a portfolio. Well, now what if you took instead, though, first of all, let me talk about something else. I want to talk about the standard deviation just quickly. You know, a standard deviation measures the amount of volatility in an asset, no matter whether it's going up or down. Well, what about if an investment just goes up, up and up and up? Then you don't care about the volatility anymore. So that's why somebody came up with the downside standard deviation. They take the just the standard deviation of the negative swings of an asset class, of a portfolio. And when you plot that on a chart, you get a similar sort of looking chart to the risk versus reward versus risk. And if you divide one by the other, you get the Sortino ratio. And there's an extra complicating factor in measuring the Sortino ratio, and that is you need to declare where the downside starts. And in Simba's spreadsheet, he often puts it at 5%. You can put it at 0%, saying that you only care about losses in a portfolio. Or if at 5%, that means I care about anything that returns less than 5%. Whew, are you still with me? I don't know. So instead of Sharpe ratio then measuring that, it would be a Sortino ratio. Sortino ratio. All right, one more thing. What if you measure returns versus max drawdown on that chart? How do you mathematically represent the best plot point? That's the Kalmar ratio. Kalmar ratio measures returns versus max drawdown. Looking around the house. Better than Ezra from their 1995 song, Good. We saw Better Than Ezra in a free concert. You know, last month we went to a senior, or a PGA, a Champions Tour event out at the Tournament Players Championship course at Potomac at Avenel near Washington, D.C. Saw Tom Kite, Tom Watson, Freddie Couples was supposed to be there. All the old guys out playing golf. And then after the event on Saturday, they had a free concert by this band, Better Than Ezra. I had never really heard of Better Than Ezra before, but when they played this song, Good, yeah, I thought, yeah, I've heard that song somewhere before. And they played some of their other hit tunes, and now I'm a big Better Than Ezra fan, and it was fun to see them. Of course, with all the old people going out to see the old golfers play, there weren't a whole lot of people in the audience listening to Better Than Ezra. Maybe 100 people stayed to listen to Better Than Ezra. Maybe 300, if I'm being optimistic. I imagine the band expected a whole lot more. Well, gee whiz, I think that's all I want to talk about today. I've got a lot left on my little list here. By the way, next show I'm going to talk about the tool I use for my list now that I found a better tool than Google Tasks for using creating my outlines, and I'll tell you about that on the next episode. I've got some other cool stuff to talk about, but I'm just going to save it for the next episode. That way I will be able to do another Mad Money Machine show. Why don't you go out and take a look at the madmoneymachine.com website? I've added some links there and improved some things there. It's easier now to subscribe to my Twitter feed. It's easier now to subscribe to the Facebook page for Mad Money Machine. And now that I'm figuring out what Facebook is all about, you can go to facebook.com/madmoneymachine now. It has its own dedicated page, and you can actually go to YouTube's Mad Money Machine channel. I don't have very many videos yet for the Mad Money Machine. And you can now, I have added back in the link to subscribe via email to madmoneymachine.com postings. So if you just don't like to use a news feed reader, or you don't like to go to the website all the time, you can get updates via email once per day. If there's any new posting, you'll get it the next day. Well, this is Paul Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes throwing the bums out to make a Mad Money Machine. I will see you soon, because I do have lots more to talk about. And in the meantime, you can email me feedback@madmoneymachine.com. And I still have that voicemail line, 571-366-7121. You can call and leave a message, and I'll play it on the show. I'm going to leave you now with a tune that I think is probably the first song by a major artist that discusses the fiat currency of the dollar. Listen to the lyrics. Elvis Costello, in his new album, National Ransom, here's the title song. See you later.
Running down hell in the head of scaring, running as hard as they do, I take. Stick out your tongue and drink down all the venom. A cut for a cut, but I'm innocent since making monster breakfast. Boiling them down in a visual and a scar. Pull out your thumb and count what's left on your face. There's a wolf at the window with a rabbit and law. Around the time the killing stopped on Wall Street.
Good luck, everybody, with your extra $600 billion. See you next time.